Okay, tonight is Sunday, the 30th day of May, 2004. And the Sunday night speakers meeting is Mount Carmel Mountain, where we go check the speaker font.
I'm Fawn and I'm an addict. And it took me a long time to come to the realization that I was an addict. First, I want to say thank you for inviting me out here and welcome to the newcomers and people that are going to take cakes and chips. You know, I was born on Camp Pendleton in 1961. I was born to a set of parents that were my mom's dad and my dad's dad were brothers, so technically I'm a through and through. I'm Hemet Pueblo Indian, Castilian Spanish, and Irish. And I'm also technically what they would call on the reservation an inbred, because my parents come from a reservation in New Mexico. And so as far back as I can remember, you know, I was the child that, you know, they would like see us and they were like, shh, you know, don't touch them, don't talk to them. You know, there's something wrong with these kids, you know what I mean? And for a really long time I grew up with not understanding why my mother's family didn't want us around and my father's family didn't want us around, and you know, and it was a really strange thing. And so, like, I guess I was about 3 or 4, my mom decided that she was going to leave. My dad had been stationed in Hawaii just before the Vietnam War, and so they were going to just get ready to split, and my mom came back to the mainland. And I didn't know that, you know, I was so young back then, that but my mom had left my father, and from the age of 4 until I was 11 years old, you know, my mom was in an interracial marriage, and my stepfather thought incest was best. And so from the age of 3, and you know, and as early as I can remember, you know, I grew up in an extreme sexual, physical, mental, emotional abuse. And with that, I turned into a very angry, hateful, cut your throat kind of bitch, you know, and that ain't no joke. My first addiction was food, because when my stepfather would come in and he would do his thing, it would repulse me, because I remember, you know, and every time my father would try to find us, well, I remember my mom, you know, I grew up in South Philadelphia, Camden, New Jersey, Olean, Buffalo, Arizona, New Mexico, all over California, you know, and just the alienation from, you know, not knowing, you know, where do I fit in and where do I belong? You know, even when I got clean, I still struggle with that with 11 and a half years clean. Where do I fit in? So, I wanted to touch on something. I grew up, the happiest time of my life, I was in Oakland, California. We were living in Oakland. My mom found out for the God knows how many times that my stepfather was, you know, doing his freaky thing, and I was the blame. It was my fault. It was always my fault. You know, I have 5 sisters and 1 brother, and it was always my fault. I was that one that used to get, you know. So, like, the happiest time of my life was when my mom, you know, at 9 years old, my mom packed my bags, and she literally kicked me out the door and broke my tailbone at 9 years old. And I'm walking down the street, you know, in Oakland, California, and not knowing, where am I going to go? And what am I going to do? And here comes my stepdad around the corner. You know, and I remember, and I have no recollection of my childhood after that, you know. And I remember going back to my grandma's house, my great-grandma, actually, on the reservation. And I literally, you know, I lived in an adobe brick house. We chopped wood, got water from a well, went to the bathroom in the outhouse, went to school called the Annex. I got to ride horses to school, and that was the happiest time of my life. I had no parental supervision. My grandma was, I think I was about 17, I went to go take care of her. And, you know, she was about 110 years old when she passed away on me. And she was, the best thing that ever walked into my life that was, you know, and she spoke the native language, and I can understand everything she said, and, you know, but I can't speak it, you know, and so One more time, my mom decided, you know, she needed the housekeeper and the cook and the babysitter and all that good stuff, so I really didn't get a formal education, you know. So my mom came and got us one more time. She came and got me one more time, and, you know, and it's like, I can't stand her. I love my mom. I have a love-hate relationship with my mom and my sisters. And so, you know what? By the age of 14, I discovered boys, because my first sexual experience was with a girl. It wasn't with a guy. It was with a girl. And so at the age of 14, the first time I ever had sex, you know, I got pregnant. And, you know, by this time, my mom's living in Pomona and 12th Street, and, you know, I was the token coconut of the barrio, so I didn't fit in because, you know, I rode Harleys and horses and, you know, and motorcycles, and I like to get dirty, and I like to do boy stuff, and, you know, and so I was like the token coconut. So here are my sisters, you know, they're dressing me up like a cholo with the eyelashes, you know. You know, so, like, I didn't fit in, and there was, the boys was like, oh, your sister's weird, you know, so... And the first time, I remember, because the first time, you know what, we used to drink wine, Mad Dog 2020, and we used to smoke pot, and we used to, you know, and I remember all this stuff, and you know, and the first time I got pregnant. And so, you know what, and that was my first reality to love. My son's dad decided, since I wasn't a virgin, that he didn't want me. And he threw me to the dogs. Well, it's not mine. And, you know, you're this and you're that and blah, 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 blah. So my best friend decided that he was going to marry me, gave my mom a pound of weed, and off to Barstow I went. And I got married. And by the time I was 17, I had two kids, a husband, and a mortgage. And I was off to Texas. I left California in 1979. And by the time I was 19, my husband was murdered in a drive-by shooting. And I spent most of my 20s in prison for armed robbery and capital murder because, like I said, I was vicious. And I was very vicious. I was also addicted to inflicting pain on others. And armed robberies were my thing, and that's what I did, and I did it very well. And then when I got out of prison, I had another set of kids. My mother-in-law, said, you know, first of all, I'm Native American Indian. I was raised in Catholicism. I married a Baptist minister's son, and I'm a white witch, okay? So I was a little screwed up with a lot of different things with the God thing. So, so here I was, and my mother-in-law hated me. I discovered the wonderful world of stripping. I figured, I'm going to get the man with the bag. Because he has it all. So I discovered the wonderful world of stripping, and here I was, young, you know. I made $1,500 a week. I had a penthouse. I had a Corvette. I had money. I had everything I could ever want, including all the drugs and alcohol and everything I could do. And my mother-in-law would not give me my kids, my two oldest ones, which are 27 and 26 now. And so I had another set. Okay, because I had to replace the two that I lost, so I had another set. So, okay, I had these two kids, and you know what, and I was out there, and I was doing my thing, and you know, I was a productive member, and I went to work every day, and I took care of my kids, and I got in this vicious cycle of shooting dope to stay awake, and shooting dope to go to sleep, and taking care of these kids, and, you know, and then, you know, my parole officer, I was on a mandatory supervision parole, she decided that, you know, I'm taking these kids away from you because you don't want to behave, blah, blah, blah. So, she took them away from me for 2 years. And my parole officer was a big dyke, and she loved me, and I took total advantage of her. I did everything she wanted to, and I took total advantage of her. Anyway, so here I was, you know, and so I threw myself back into getting loaded. And I got loaded, I got loaded, I got loaded. I'm going to tell you guys how we all got loaded because I did. You know, I earned my seat here. And so one day I get this phone call, my roommate, I'm working for the Mexican Mafia at this club in Texas, and I'm stripping for the banditos, you know, on this side here, you know. And this guy, my roommate says, hey, I got a problem, you know. I got an 8-ball coming in, and this dude, you know, he's going to give you $100 and a gram of cocaine, and all you got to do is just spend 15 minutes with him. And I said, okay. So here I went, you know, 15 minutes. 3 days later, dude calls me up and says, I need somebody to drive a car. You got a driver's license? I said, sure. So off to Oklahoma I go, and I come back, and I'm transporting, you know, and by this time I figured, hey, I can have fun doing this. I'm transporting drugs from Oklahoma back here. I didn't know that he had been, the DEA had been watching the dude, and so, like, when I get back to Lubbock, you know, from Oklahoma back to Lubbock, here I tip out the weed in this car, and I go to drop it off, and my house got raided, and everybody else's house got raided, and 3 days later, I had a 357 to the back of my head, and I married the connection, okay? And I hated that man. I hated him with every fiber of being in me. And that man tortured me on a daily basis. I don't remember the day I got married. I only remember the day I left. And he used to lock me up in a trailer 10 miles out in the country and literally lock me in there. And he would literally, when he would come home, he would play Russian roulette. And I remember that, you know, he would chain me to the coffee table, and there would be mounds and mounds and mounds of cocaine that I would have to go and distribute and you know, all night long. And then I would have these two little kids that I was taking care of, you know, that I would have to get up and, you know, get my kids ready for school the next morning. And after, you know, my husband would have me, you know, tied up to the kitchen table or the coffee table, wherever he felt fit, you know, and play Russian roulette with me all night long while I'm, you know, and most of the time I was like this, you know. And so when I got off parole in 90, because I was on a long parole, very long, I was like so glad to get off parole. When I got off parole, you know, my husband was one more time, he was out and about, he beat the case. I had a real job, everything was cool. And he was, went off, stole my car, went and smoked it out. He comes home and crawling on his hands and knees, and you know, I looked at him and I was like, you're pathetic. And he was like, call an ambulance, I'm having a heart attack. You know, he was having a cocaine-induced heart attack. And I was like, huh. I pulled the phone out of the wall. I locked the door. I lit a joint. I opened up a beer. I put the chair there. And I said, die, motherfucker. Okay? I said, and he's turning blue. 5 minutes later, I got this. My sister-in-law, Jesus said to come and save Mondo. I was like, oh, my God. You know? And I was like, is this ever going to end? You know? So off to rehab, he went. This was my first introduction to Narcotics Anonymous. And everything was going to be bitching because he was clean and he was going to get me clean. And so I was like, see ya. Well, one more time, you know, I had to get a real job. So I managed a Burger King on top of my stripping. My husband didn't work. He didn't do anything. And so I did. I managed Burger King for 3 years. I loved it across from Texas Tech University. I had the dog shift, 6 at night to 6 in the morning. And I'll tell you, I was loaded constantly. And so with that, you know, he decided that he was going to take my children, and they were all going to go to SeaWorld, and everything was going to be spiffy, and we were the perfect family. And, you know, when he got back, I had worked from Friday night until Sunday morning, and I was tired. I did not want to be bothered with him, you know. Not to mention doing 15 loads of laundry and cleaning the house. I just didn't want to be bothered with him. And he came back, he beat the hell out of me, threw me out a second story window, went and retrieved me, drug me back upstairs, threw me out, and all I remember is going to work, picking up my check, cashing my check, and getting on a Greyhound bus, and I ended up in Claremont. And I don't remember even getting out here. I just remember that it was sometime in the 90s, and my sisters picked me up, and they said, oh, here, smoke this. This will make everything all right. And I never was one to smoke crack. I'm a heroin addict. I like methamphetamine and anything else that'll fit in a rig. And so, you know, with my crack was like not my thing. And I was like, you know. So anyway, I ran around. And I'm going to hurry up and get clean here because, you know what? I fucking ran amok. I ran amok. I was bouncing. I didn't realize that, okay, I have 5 sisters. I did not realize that my sister that's underneath me was using my name from 1979 until 1990 when I got here. Okay? I had $60,000 worth of damage on my TRW when I had AAA credit in another state. And I get out here and I cannot get on welfare. I had left my kids, my car, my clothes, $45,000 in the bank. I left my condo. I left it all. I came out here with a pair of shorts and a pair of jeans and a tank top and my leather jacket, and I left my kids. So I had to figure out, okay, how am I going to get, you know, my husband saying, you got to come home. No, I don't. You know, I don't want to. So, you know, my sense of freedom was, yay! And so, you know, I ended up having to get my kids and out here, and I lost them. January the 21st of 1991. My children were acting stupid because by this time, and I couldn't get anybody to help me, so you know what? I was living in a shooting gallery. And I would literally, you know, I'd go to my sister's house and pay their rent and get their food with the food stamps when it was, you know, every 2 weeks. And then when she'd get all smoked out on my money, she'd throw me out at 11 o'clock at night with my kids. Then I'd go to my other sister's house and she would do the same thing, you know. And in between that, we would fist fight, you know. So, like, here I was, you know, and here I was in this hotel, and I finally got this place, and it was a shooting gallery that I, you know, I raised my children in a shooting gallery, you know, because I couldn't find anywhere else to go, you know. And I was out at this bar, because they wouldn't go to sleep, and I was out at this bar, and I was one of three girls that got abducted, and I got literally raped and beat and thrown out of a car going 60 miles an hour, and they videotaped all this. And because I was the perfect citizen, I got shoved through the system. And, you know, so with that, I'm at the hospital, and, you know, the tweakers came and got me, and they're, like, freaking out. And, you know, 2 days later, the guy comes to my door, and he knocks on the door, and he hands my ID and all the evidence that I had left in this place, and he said, if you testify against me, I'm going to kill you and your kids. Well, believe it or not, there wasn't enough drugs in this world, because I got so fucked up, I stayed high. And I went to the school the next day with this police report and this hospital report, and I told them that I needed help. And that if, you know, I don't know what you're going to do or how you're going to do this, but I need help now. Because this man is going to come back and he's going to kill my kids. I don't want to go back to prison for another, you know. I had already shot an old man out here, and I didn't want to go back to prison. Because, like, you know, when I get mad, I accidentally hurt people. And I had to beat up a social worker. I had to literally beat the hell out of a DS, children's social worker, you know? Because she wouldn't listen to me. And I figured, hey, if I throw this tantrum, I'm going to get my way. Because anytime I get my way. And so, like, I had to beat her up. And for, like, you know, the next 4 years, my children were in foster care. And so here I was. They gave me a choice right there, right? They said, you want a case or you want to go to a mental institution? And I said, California prison? Nut ward. San Bernardino, here I come. And I went to the nut ward, and I can relate to the drugs because I was on stilazine, Miloril, methadone, thorazine, and lithium on top of alcohol, cocaine, heroin, and speed. And I remember coming out of a drug-induced psychosis on Hope Boulevard in front of Stater Brothers. And the only thing I had on was a pair of shorts, a flip-flop, and a tank top. And I had my ID and this dude's card that I met at this pool tournament. And he was like an Alcoholics Anonymous. And he gave me like this 20 questions, and he said, you think you got a problem? And I was like, nope, just buy me another beer, honey, you know. And by that time, I had already went into renal failure. I weighed 39 pounds. I was yellow from hepatitis. And Pomona Valley Hospital told me I couldn't die on their doorstep. And this dude came and got me. He threw me on the back of his Harley. And he dropped me off at this place called Basic Fellowship in Pomona. And every day for a week, you know, I had to tell you that I went into complete renal failure because, you know what, my body was so used to the drugs that I didn't have it. And I, you know, I was just like, ooh. And so I didn't stay clean. And so I'm pondering my life at the corner, you know, and this old dude said, he comes to me and he says, I'll give you $50 if you pee on me. Shit, I jumped in the car. Just like that. Hell yeah, thought I did it. So, you know, I'm pondering my life as I'm going to the Connections House, and I'm figuring, hey, I got to do something about this. I ended up in Hollywood. I detoxed on the streets of Hollywood. I remember my last using it was 4th of July. I was at the Motel 6 in Ontario, and that's all I remember. I don't remember what day it was. I don't remember what time it was. I just remember it was sometime in July. And you know what? And at that point, I ended up in Hollywood. I was on the streets of Hollywood. I detoxed on the streets. I ate out of garbage cans. I went to meetings at the DNA Center in West Hollywood. I went to any lengths to stay clean. And when I finally got a sponsor, she's like, and I started getting healthy. I couldn't get into detox. I couldn't get into no recovery houses. I couldn't get anywhere. You know, nowhere. No one would help me. No one. Nothing. Nunca. So finally, I just, you know, I struggled, and I told my sponsor, I said, you know, I don't even know, because my roots are blonde, and I'm a kind of a dingy, and I don't know. And so I picked a day that it was, you know, the end of the month, which is the July the 21st, and that's from that day forward, July the 21st of 1992 is my clean date. You know, and I haven't felt it necessary to get loaded from that day forward, okay? But since I've been clean, let's talk about the no matter what. How much more time do I have?
About 12 minutes.
Okay. The no matter what, my first year, okay? I got an accident. I was crippled on crutches for 2 years. It took me 4 years to get my children out of the system. I got a public apology from the judge because the judge told me that the system was failing me. I didn't fail it. I ended up with cancer. I ended up having 5 surgeries. I lost my sponsor. She passed away from and died on me. And the women in the program have turned their back on me. I haven't been able to find a sponsor. Then when I did finally find a sponsor, she just told me last week that I got to find a new one because she doesn't have time for me. And let me tell you, it's been a struggle every stinking day. But I haven't gotten loaded. You know? I've gotten into some serious fucked up relationships, some really bad ones, some abusive ones, some okay ones, and you know what, and I just keep one foot in front of the other, like the little choo-choo train saying, I can do this, yes I can, I'm going to do this, you know what I mean? And I wouldn't trade what I have at this moment for what I had before, because even though I had the penthouse and the Corvette and the diamonds and everything, and I was in that, you know, I'm one of those women that I've had it all. I've lived my cat lives, and you know, in the life that I have today. But you know what? It's like I'm not a materialistic person. I could really care less. I have peace of mind, serenity. I'm loved, and I know I'm loved. You know, my best friend in the whole wide world, who used to be my boyfriend, but he's my best friend in the whole wide world. I've stuck by him through no matter what, and I've never shut the door on him. You know, never. Because you know what, I don't know about you, but my program teaches me is that I don't turn my back on an addict who's still getting loaded, who's using, who's trying to struggle their way in this program. You know, who has some clean time and knows what it's about, and who messes up, and who makes mistakes, and who slips and falls, and you bump your head and you come back. I hate it when I see people going, oh, he got disconnected from the meeting. You know, it pisses me off. Because it's like, hello, when I woke up this morning, I'm looking at a dope fiend, and a pretty arrogant one at that. I have issues, okay? I have anger issues. I have intimacy issues. Most of the time, I really don't like who I look at myself. I don't think, you know, I don't like what I see. I was like, oh, you're so pretty, you're so cute, you're so this. You know, well, that's your opinion. That's not what I see, you know. That's not the person that I see. Because I know me, and I've done some really rank shit to some serious people that, you know what, and I have to live with it for the rest of my life. And most of the time, I feel fat, ugly, and dumpy. You know, I go to school full time. I'm a college student. And, you know, it's like, whew. I just discovered at school that I have scopic dyslexia, where I see everything upside down and backwards. And when I walked into this program, I couldn't read or write. And I have 132 IQ. So I couldn't read or write when I walked in this program because I didn't get a formal education as a child. And if somebody would have paid attention to me as a little kid, you know what? My girlfriend, she's like this millionaire, and she's like, well, you just weren't exposed. I said, exposed to what? I said, can you imagine if I was exposed? What, honey? I was exposed. You know, she's one of my clients because I'm part owner of an eviction business, and she's like, you were just one exposed. I was like, if you only knew, sister, you only knew. You know, I was exposed. Not to that lifestyle, but pretty close. But you know what? I'm generally a happy-go-lucky person, and you can't make me happy. I have to make myself happy, and that's what I've learned. And I can, you know, I'm not looking for the money, property, and prestige, and I'm not looking for that wonderful dude, because this is an incestual environment. Everybody's with everybody, sooner or later. And, you know,
where's my
it's kid? True. It's true. And you know what? And I get really irritated with hearing gossip, you know? It's like, how dare you talk about that person? If you can't be nice to their face, then don't be nasty to their back. It's rude. It's rude, crude, and socially unacceptable. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I've lost homes. I've had homes. I don't know. You know, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to shut up after this. I had the best Mother's Day this year. I have a son who tried to commit suicide 9 times, you know, since I've been clean, and I put him in residential placement. He's in Houston. And, so I don't get him on Mother's Day because he only gets to come every 90 days. My oldest son is 27, and I got loaded with this guy. We slung dope together. We got loaded. He held me hostage a few times. And he gave me a card, and he said, Mom, and because we went out to brunch, he said, Mom, I just want to let you know that I am so grateful that you showed me the program. I am so grateful that you got clean, because without you getting clean and getting right, I wouldn't have my home, my wife, and my child. And I have to thank you. And this is a child who used to call me a bitch and a whore. And he hated me. And because I didn't know what I was doing. I was 14 when I had him. I didn't know what I was doing. And today, it's not like that. Today, he loves me. He respects me. He still tells me I'm stupid, but that's okay. you know? And I have the coolest little grandson. He's 3 years old, and he calls me Crazy Grandma. And I get to go over there, and he'll call me up, and this is why I cried, because he calls me up, and he's like, Grandma, I want Donald. And he'll go, please, and I'm there. you know? I'm stupid. I'm right there. And, you know, I go, and I get him what he wants, and I spoil the shit out of him. And I'm going to be another grandma here probably this November, October, my daughter-in-law's going to have another baby. And that's the beauty of my life. And I guess that's all I got. Thanks for asking me to speak, and thanks for listening to me.